Welcome to ACC Nation. I'm Jim Quist. That's Will Ogenen. And our special guest is the publisher of Jackets Online. That's Kelly Quinlan. Kelly, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be on.
Man, we're going to be talking some Georgia Tech football. There's a lot to be optimistic about. Are you in that camp of being super optimistic about what Jeff Collins is doing in his third year?
I mean, I think this is a team that should be turning the corner now and getting into being more competitive in the Coastal. You still have a tough schedule. You still have Clemson and Notre Dame and Georgia and a trip to Miami on the schedule, plus North Carolina and the Benz here, Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But, you know, overall, this is a team that should go bowling. Like, they have a lot of talent, have a lot of guys who are going to be potential NFL guys. And this should be where you start to win games, right? Like, they've been laying the groundwork here. That's what Coach Collins talks about, is this is sort of a progression year to year. And, you know, they won three games. And now it's time to win six games, you know, like get to that bowl game, get in the hunt for the ACC Coastal. You know, really, other than North Carolina and Miami, everybody's about the same in the rest of the conference on that side. So I think it's an opportunity for them to really kind of punch back out of this and be competitive the way that Paul Johnson and even Chan Gailey and George O'Leary were before him.
So I'm not a pessimist about the Yellow Jackets, but here I'm going to take my angel of optimism and move it over here to the devil of pessimism. Because there are plenty of people who are looking back over the last couple of seasons and the tail end of Paul Johnson and going, okay, yeah, sure, Georgia Tech's going to win 6-8 games. Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it. Answer those folks.
Sure. So, you know, what's funny is, like, my projection is somewhere 5-7 wins, and that was what Tech fans were complaining about when Paul Johnson was here, when he could have seasons like that. And I think there's been kind of this hard reset as they've been trying to rebuild the roster. You know, the things that killed them last year, two things. COVID was huge for them, with COVID protocols and losing kids. And then just self-inflicted mistakes, right? Like, Jeff Sims, their starting quarterback, led the country in turnovers by himself. As a true freshman starting at quarterback, you had no kicking game whatsoever. You know, you have a guy now in year two, Jeff Sims, that's going to be better and should, and he really cut down on the mistakes in the second half of the season as he got more mature. And the kicking game, they addressed, they signed, or they added a transfer, Brett Smaglia from Tennessee, who's very solid over his career. He should fix that issue. And, you know, when you don't have a kicking game, you have to coach around that. I think there were some games where they made some decisions that they would not make if you had a solid kicker, and it cost them. I think they left two games on the field last year, for sure. The game against Syracuse, and then probably the Pittsburgh game. And you can even go as far as say NC State and UCF would have been a little bit different, with, you know, just less turnovers, don't shoot yourself in the foot, those kind of things.
So, Kelly, I think the strength of this offense is undoubtedly its ability to run, not just with Jeff Sims, as you mentioned a moment ago, but obviously Jahmyr Gibbs, who looks like an absolute stud, and Jordan Mason is still really good. So Gibbs and Mason, how do you expect the running back carries to shake out? Is it more likely that Collins will mostly go with a hot hand, or does he have a design percentage of who he might want to get the ball to?
They tend to go with the hot hand. They like to rotate. There's four guys they like to rotate, actually. There's Jahmyr and Jordan, who you mentioned, and then Dante Smith, who played really well for them last year, and Jamias Griffin, who was hurt last year, who was their first sort of splash signing guy that they added the year before Gibbs. And those guys are all going to get touches. You know, they're going to be a little more of a run heavy team, I think, this year. They've talked about bully ball being a goal, kind of to try to impose their will on teams running the football and having more of a power running game from the spread. And I think that's something that they can do with the personnel they have now. I think the offensive line's mature to a point where they can start to be more physical up front, and their starting offensive line's basically four upperclassmen and then maybe a freshman or a transfer senior. So it's a pretty veteran group. And you mix all that up, you have Gibbs, who's special, can catch the ball and run the ball in space. I think you need to find ways to get him the ball and be creative, but also use those other guys to keep teams from keying on Gibbs too much too. And the thing with Gibbs is he can flex out. He can play line up as a receiver. He can line up in the slot. He can do a lot of different things for you that a normal running back can't. And so I think that gives them great flexibility of going two backs at a time if they need to, or being creative with their personnel at times.
So you just mentioned it a moment ago. You could see Gibbs potentially lining up at receiver plus Mason or one of the other backs in the backfield. That just gives it an extra dynamic to this offense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Gibbs is if he's lined up out there, you have to put a DB on him. A linebacker's not going to cut it. He's just going to blow by a linebacker, and that's what they're looking for, right? And that should. And the thing is, like, Gibbs is such a great weapon to have. He's going to drag out coverage. He's going to probably require safety help if he's out lined up in the slot. And if you do that, that opens up a lot of RPO opportunities if there's another back in the game for both, you know, Jeff Sims and another running back, right? And then you can move Gibbs around. You can bring him, drop him down like a slot receiver and have him run across the line of run in front of the quarterback and take those tosses and do all the things you can do with slot receiver with him as well. And I think that's where his utility comes into play for them, that he's just a guy that can do so many different things as a weapon on the field, even as a return guy, that they have to figure out ways to get him the ball and use that specialness. And it reminds me of, sort of Reggie Bush, right? Like when he was at USC and they had him and Lindell White and they both got touches, right? It wasn't just one guy. You find a way to incorporate it and have them on the field together at times, and also to just make sure you're maximizing that dude's potential and getting him as many touches as possible.
There's a lot of guys. I mean, obviously the leading receiver from last year, Jalen Camp's comp, but there's a lot of guys who caught passes for the Yellow Jackets. Who do you figure as being the guy who could potentially step up besides Gibbs in the passing game?
The guy I like right now is Kyrie McGowan, who's a transfer they picked up from Northwestern. He can play the slot. That's probably where you will see him the most, I think. He can also play outside receiver. He can line up as a running back too. He's a very versatile guy. He gives you that sort of dynamic weapon. He's also really good friends with Gibbs, which is kind of interesting. He came in as a grad transfer senior. He's really been a nice shot in the arm for the receiving core. They have Adonicus Sanders, who was maybe their best third down guy last year, is just a very steady kind of possession receiver, but has some decent wheels. And then Malachi Carter, who's been sort of their number two receiver the last few years, is a guy who's got to kind of put it together now. He's a veteran and has shown flashes of great ability, just hasn't been super consistent in his career.
Sounds like this team is ready to drop a few points on some people if things come together, but it all revolves not around Sims, not around Gibbs, not around the wide receivers, but that offensive line. Are they going to be able to give Sims the time? And are they going to be able to road grade for Gibbs to make all this happen?
So, you know, they have some nice additions through various ways. One of them's left tackle Devin Cochran, who came from Vanderbilt, was a 3-year SEC starter, is a left tackle that's a NFL prospect. He has locked down the position. He's been there since the spring. The real kind of interesting guy in camp has been Kenny Cooper, who was on the Remington list and was like a all conference center under Paul Johnson, and then got hurt his first year with Coach Collins as a senior. He played 4 games, took a medical redshirt, I guess it was just his redshirt year. And then last year got the COVID year, he was hurt again. He's really just not played since 2018, been healthy. He's finally healthy. He is an absolute kind of just mauler at guard. So on that left side, you've kind of secured things. Center position was an issue last year. Mikey Minahan seems to have settled down a little bit. That's sort of the one kind of, I think, area that a lot of people are wondering about. Now, on the right side, you have Ryan Johnson. You have either Jordan Williams, who started last year, or Kenneth Kirby, a kid they picked up from Norfolk State, or Nick Penley, a kid they picked up from Mississippi State. One of those three guys will be the right tackle. Jordan Williams played all last season at right tackle. You have basically a lot of guys with chemistry there. So I feel like they have enough bodies. And Brent Key's a good enough offensive line coach that he can figure out a combination that's going to be effective for them. And they have some depth finally there, really. They've maybe been 6-7 deep where he was comfortable playing. I think they're closer to 8 or 9 now. So I think that makes a huge difference too, when you have confidence to go to your bench and pull a guy if a guy's struggling or if he's not healthy or whatever. They've kind of been in the situation where they just had to play who the starters were for the first 2 years. And I think now they finally have some options.
So the rub in the past has always been, well, there's no beef. Where's the beef on the line? And it's not only that on the offensive line, but it was also on the defensive line as well. And that's a question, I know it seems simple, but are we seeing an increase in the weights, the heights, the wingspans of these guys that are on the offensive line and the defensive line, because it's going to make a big difference in how this whole game plan comes together under Collins?
I mean, I think that's been the one real true focus for Coach Collins since he got to Georgia Tech, is he wanted to get bigger on the lines of scrimmage, and they're definitely there. I mean, Devin Cochran, 6'6", what is he? He's probably, 315, something like that. Jordan Williams, who's a freshman they signed that started last year, he's 6'6", 330 probably. Kenny Cooper's 330 left guard. Ryan Johnson, the right guard, is, probably over 300 pounds. So they've gotten much bigger there. Defensively, that's where you really see the most, the biggest change. I mean, they have a lot of long, lean guys and big guys as well. And they added, some really interesting pieces to that side of the ball too. Like you added Keon White, who was a kid from Old Dominion that was among the leaders in the country in tackles for a loss 2 years ago, didn't play last year. He is a legit NFL guy. He's got a real chance to be something special. He'll miss maybe the first couple of games of the year coming off an injury in the offseason, but he's really dynamic. They've added, Jared Ivey, who they had played as a true freshman last year because of injuries. Sylvain Yondajun, they have some bigger guys. And then they added some freaky rush-end types like Kevin Harris, who they picked up as a transfer from Alabama, and Kyle Kennard, who they recruited, and Jordan Dominick. So I think their pass rush will be better. The inside is kind of what the question's been on that D-tackle spot, and they're a lot bigger there too. Their best D-tackle missed the entire season last year, TK Chimezda. He's back. He's put well over 300 pounds now. He gives them something a little different there. They added Micaiah Scott, a kid from South Carolina, as a transfer. It's a big guy. They've done a nice job of kind of plugging and playing as they've been able to, using the transfer portal to kind of backfill some of the position spots that maybe got lost in the transition year from Paul Johnson to Jeff Collins, and maybe where they didn't hit in their first recruiting class, or they needed to hit more guys. They've gone in and added those pieces. And I think the lines of scrimmage look a lot more like the teams they're playing, the Clemsons and the Georgias, than they did 3 years ago. And I think that's a good thing for what Coach Collins and his staff want to do.
Sounds like some of Collins' proclivities toward going to Waffle House are rubbing off on the players here. Quick question for you. We're going to stray just for a moment before Will gets into a little more depth on defense. Some quick thoughts on realignment and the alliance.
It's a weird thing. I sat through that press conference with the alliance and I just kind of wondered what it was and what it means. And, gentlemen's agreements and all of those things are kind of an interesting concept. To me, that whole thing is all about negotiating leverage for the college football playoffs and to keep the SEC at bay from poaching other teams. And that's literally what it's entirely about, keeping their teams together, keeping kind of a voting block to prevent things from happening that they don't want. I don't think anybody's looking for 120 scholarships, right? You don't want to see Alabama with 120 scholarships. You don't want to see Alabama with, 20 on the field coaches, things like that, that'll come up in voting situations. And then also the college football playoff, because I think ESPN thought they had this kind of locked up, and then they're being accused by the Big 12 of having tampered with Texas and Oklahoma to try to create a mega conference. Maybe they were looking at trying to to build something that was 32 teams or whatever it was. And we're going to try to poach off teams and kick teams out. And this is kind of a protective move. Ohio State and Michigan have no interest in playing in the SEC. You know, I don't think Penn State does either, or USC or UCLA or Oregon. Like, I think it's just bad for all of those teams in North Carolina or Georgia Tech or whoever, Florida State, Clemson. Like, it doesn't make any sense for those teams, and it kills college football. And I think this was about trying to hold on to whatever's left of it. And it'll be interesting to see if it works out. To me, I've always been an advocate. I think they should blow up all of the conferences, go hyper regional, where you have a league that's almost like soccer, where you have, you know, all of the teams in Georgia in one division with maybe the teams in South Carolina, and that's a conference, and they play each other, and you lift up the Georgia States and the Coastal Carolinas, make them a little bit better, and then you have a real playoff with all these teams, and you bring the regional aspect of college football back, which I think has been really lost in all of this, and all the rivalries have died because of things like teams changing conferences and teams not playing each other anymore. And to me, it's just sad. I think it's sad when you don't have Texas and Texas A&M play each other. Now they will, of course, but just things like that. I think you lose a lot when you don't have Nebraska playing their old, you know, foes from the Texas and all those teams. Like, I think there's just something lost when you don't have those rivalry games. And no one cares about watching, and the Big Ten cares about watching Rutgers in Maryland. Like, that doesn't make any sense that they're, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that I think that's dumb that's been done in all of this. Arkansas is my prime example of this, as a team that's become irrelevant by changing conferences, right? They won their league several times right before they moved. They won the SEC West a couple of times when Alabama and Auburn were on probation and were kind of a mess. And then since then, they've done nothing and haven't really been a competitive product in terms of winning 10 games plus a year in a long time. It's the same. A&M sort of in a similar boat. They can't get over the edge. They were winning their conference before they left the Big 12. Like, did that really work out for them? I don't think so. Like, I think people are chasing money, and that's sort of the wrong approach here. I think the short-term money grabs are costing them more money in the long run in terms of being competitive and having a product their fans really want to see on the field.
Who would have ever thought that Kelly's a sentimentalist? We'll talk about defense here.
Hey, I'm kind of a sentimentalist too, so I can get there. But back to the defense for a second. Just kind of as a whole, like with the extra year, the COVID issues that allowed, you know, these people to come back for another year, plus the transfers, plus some of the players that probably wouldn't have played last year got the chance because some players were out with COVID and injuries. This defense as a whole seems like it's just a lot deeper this year, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think all 11 starters will be guys who have at least 3 years of college football experience under their belt on the defense, with multiple seniors and guys who are academically seniors who are in their fourth or fifth year in the program or grad transfers. It's a much older defense, and I think that's going to really pay a lot of dividends for them. And it's deeper now, too. You know, that was a kind of an issue as well, as they were kind of building it up. They had all the secondary depth and were thin on the lines. Well, they've addressed all of that. They're probably got, you know, 7 or 8 D tackles that you would feel comfortable playing in a game right now with. That's a far cry from where they were in year one when they had like 3.5. So those things I think will all start to pay off. They all have experience in the defense. To me, I think they got to get after the passer. That's kind of been the thing that's killed them and has created a lot of the you know, big plays, the explosives that have killed them and games where guys turn their heads around. They're covering somebody too long. The quarterback has too much time. Those things are going to go away as you get more pressure on the quarterback and you have better play in the back end because of that and more confidence, right? So to me, you know, the areas I'm going to be really looking at in this first game, linebacker play, which has not been great the last 2 years. And they added Andaile, who will from Maryland, who's stepping into that Mike linebacker role, gives him a real vocal leader on the field, a guy who can run sideline to sideline. And then Charlie Thomas and Quez Jackson will split the other linebacker spot, I think. And they're, you know, Charlie's a guy who has a nose for the football. He has the weirdest career trajectory of anyone I've ever seen. He was playing safety. He played linebacker his first year under Coach Collins. Went back to safety last year because he's a safety-sized guy. He ended up starting at defensive end against NC State because they had all of their defensive ends were out with COVID or injured.
Oh, geez.
So they had three guys. They had two true freshmen and Charlie Thomas at 205 pounds playing defensive end against NC State. And, you know, but he's a guy who has a knack for the football. He just wants to line up and play, and he's back where he should be at linebacker. So, and Quez is just a tackle machine. Those guys have got to step up and do their things. And I think personnel wise, they're a lot closer to where they want to be on the defensive side of the ball, that it's got to start to click now. And I think Coach Collins will be more hands-on with the defense, which should yield better results, right? And he's a defensive coach. At the end of the day, you want your defense to be good if you have a defensive coach. Like, that's the idea of hiring a Jeff Collins, is you want to be, the idea is you're going to be good at defense and special teams. And both of those things really struggled at times last year.
So these first two games, you obviously touched on a moment ago, they open up in Northern Illinois. I think they're sitting at about an 18-point favorite right now. So they're, and obviously this isn't the same Northern Illinois that was coached by Jerry Kill or Dave Doran, but these first two games, do you think winning comfortably, is especially in this first game, is going to be most important?
I think they need it for confidence sake. I need, think the fans want to see them beat somebody soundly. They really have struggled with that. Yeah, I think the one game they won soundly was beating Louisville. And really, other than that, they haven't done that. They haven't won back-to-back games since Jeff Collins has been there. Like, those little hurdles, I think if you start to do that, will create some momentum that they can carry through the season. And, you know, they're going to need some confidence going up to Clemson in week three. And that is a tall task, and it's a difficult situation for Georgia Tech. They play Clemson and North Carolina. They play at Clemson and then North Carolina on back-to-back weeks, who are both have potential to be top 10 teams at that time. You know, that is a tough stretch. So you need to be 2-0 going into that stretch, because then the schedule becomes manageable in the middle section. You play Pitt, you play Duke, Virginia, and Virginia Tech, who are all teams that are flawed and have lost a lot of players over the last few years and have struggled to replace them. So if you can get through those first two games at 2-2, I mean, first four, 2-2, then you're set up nicely to get into your coastal chunk. And, you know, maybe they pull off an upset here or there, and you're bowling. Like, if you can handle your business in that stretch. And, you know, it goes all the way really through the BC game on the 13th of November. And then the last two, again, are two hard games to play at Notre Dame and Georgia close out the season, which will be a real test.
To say the least. You know, we talk a lot on here about teams that are flying under the radar. And my gut tells me this team is close to being one of those teams that you better not sleep on. You're expressing some confidence in how they'll do against that middle of portion of the season, the Pitt, the Duke, the Virginia, Virginia Tech, indicating they're, you know, these are flawed teams. And this is true. So you have some optimism that Georgia Tech will walk away with wins, or at least will keep it close. So would you say that Georgia Tech should be on our radar as a flying under the radar team?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I actually spent today going through the, I went through the entire ACC schedule and picked all of the games, right, to try to figure out what, where I kind of saw everybody in the league. And, mm-hmm. you know, when I look at all of it, I see Georgia Tech as sort of a middle of the pack team right now, which would be a huge step up from kind of where everyone expects them to be. I think I have them, you know, 7-5, 6-6, somewhere in that range in the regular season, which would be a huge jump up. You know, really, other than, you know, I think Pitt has an easy schedule, so I think they're going to finish ahead of Georgia Tech, and then probably North Carolina and Miami, just based on talent. You know, and I think other than that, you know, the rest of their games are going to be really interesting. And there's sort of three teams I'm keeping an eye on this year. Georgia Tech's one of them. I think Boston College and Wake Forest are two other teams that I think people are sleeping on a lot in the league. Wake has a ton of super seniors. And I think Jeff Hathaway is just a really good coach. So,
you know. It's going to be interesting. So, you know, since you went down that path, if you're going to look at these other teams, would you say that Boston College and Wake Forest are two of the sleepers that maybe that people ought to be keeping an eye on, or is there anybody else on that ACC roster of all teams that maybe we're not paying enough attention to?
To me, I think Wake is one that their schedule is really favorable. They get Florida State at home. They get Louisville at home. They go to Virginia, which is, I think that's going to be, if they beat Virginia in Virginia week four, I think that's going to be a real turning point for that team. You know, they play Syracuse, Army, Duke. Like, it's not murderer's row. You know, the back half of their schedule is hard. They play at UNC, play NC State, at Clemson, and at Boston College. So that'll kind of determine their season. But to me, I think they're, you know, probably the third best team in their division. I think NC State is probably the second best. And then obviously Clemson. I have a hard time picking a loss for Clemson when I looked at their schedule. It's just like, I don't really see a team that's going to beat them, but I'm sure someone will give them a scare or beat them. But I just don't see it looking at the schedule. To me, the team I think that everyone's really overselling right now is Florida State. That is a huge, you talk about what Jeff Collins inherited. At least he inherited good kids and like a solid locker room. And that is not what Mike Norvell walked into there. He walked into a dumpster fire on top of a dumpster fire. Like,
And then he spread some of the gasoline himself.
Yeah. And you know, like their schedule is not easy. They got to go to Clemson, they go to Wake, which is weird. And they play Notre Dame, you know, right off the rip. So I just don't see it. And their team like Miami, that they'll fold up if things get tough early in the year. Like I don't think they have the mental fortitude to overcome a rough start. And, you know, they'll play whatever their, I forget who their FCS game is, but you know, picking on UMass and Syracuse isn't going to get you to a bowl game. They're going to have to beat some real teams, and the way their schedule sets up playing Notre Dame, North Carolina, and Miami, to me, it just seems like that's not happening. Like, I don't see them going to a bowl game, and I could see them going as bad, you know, having as bad a season as a 3-win season this year.
Wow. Interesting. Let's throw a little shade here as we get close to the end. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Out of all of the coaches in the ACC, who do you think, and it can be more than one, who do you think is the most likely person who is sitting on or pretty daggone close to being on the hot seat right at this moment?
I mean, I think that Justin Fuente, I mean, their schedule is really soft, and they should have most of their wins are going to come in the first couple of games and the two kind of bad games they play. It'll be interesting. He needs to like upset West Virginia in week three. If he doesn't do that, I think he's going to be gone, because you look at their schedule, they play Notre Dame as well. They have to go to Boston College. They have to play, you know, they do get a break playing Syracuse, but I have them at 4 wins, and that's going to get him fired. And I think rightfully so. Dino Babers will be really interesting, because I have them at 2 wins. I think they beat Ohio and Albany, and that's it. I don't think they're going to beat Liberty. Like, it's a bad game for them to play in a crossover. And they play Rutgers, who's a much better team than they were a few years ago with Shiano, who's a very good coach. I just don't see how they're going to win, and that's a thin team too. And, you know, I wonder what Cut's going to do at Duke. I think the way I look at their season is I have them winning 3 of their first 4 games and then maybe not winning another game the rest of the year. And that'll be really hard to sell if you go on a long losing streak in the back half of your season. I don't know where the win's coming, because they play you know, Kansas and Charlotte and all these teams up front, and then they play Carolina, Tech, Virginia, Wake, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Louisville, Miami. I don't know who they beat out of that that group.
Tough. Yeah, that list, I think, corresponds with how everybody feels in the media so far. I don't know if fans of those teams feel that way, but they should be, certainly. Kelly Quinlan, the publisher of Jackets Online, our special guest on ACC Nation. And thank you, Kelly, so much for dropping in and sharing some thoughts on Georgia Tech football. We're really looking forward to the season and seeing what's going on. And make sure that you follow Kelly at Jackets Online. Plenty of excellent content, premium content. Make sure that you subscribe. And one quick question for you. When football season comes around, what is the one food you depend on every season that you look forward to that you must have in order to enjoy a game?
I mean, I'm a wings guy. I enjoy my wings on college football Saturday. And luckily, Georgia Tech's opening with a night game, so I will get to enjoy my wings during the day, watching the afternoon slate of games, and then I'll go over to Tech in the evening for the kickoff. But yeah, I really enjoy sitting and curling up with some wings and flipping between three or four different games, and sometimes I'll have multiple devices out to watch if there's something really gets me interested. In college, we used to have two giant televisions next to each other in our living room, so we could watch all the games at the same time, and we would go picture in picture on them. And yeah, it's just like, that's just when I think of watching college football, I think of wings.
So let's see how big of a wings fan you really are. Type of hot sauce. If you use hot sauce on your wings, do you use?
Oh, like if I put, if I make my own wings or something.
Sure.
So, I mean, I like Frank's. Like, Frank's is very solid. I do like some of the more like obscure sauces and the weird stuff you find at like a firehouse or whatever. Like, they have all the little weird sauces.
Gotcha.
I do enjoy trying some of those, but I have like one place here in Atlanta that I go to a lot that's not far from me, and they kind of do me right. But I'm always interested in trying different wings, and I am a fan of them spicy. I like the hot or hotter style wings.
I got you. Okay. Sounds good. Kelly, again, thank you for joining us and talking Georgia Tech football. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks, guys.
Want more ACC sports news and interviews? Make accnation.net your homepage or follow us on Google News. Be sure to subscribe to ACC Nation on your favorite podcast or streaming radio platform. While you're there, we'd appreciate a rating and your support through PayPal. Follow us on social media at ACC Nation. And you'll find Will on Twitter at WillsWorldMN, and I'm at ACC The Q. Until next time, cheers.
Score.